You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, community, economy, and our environment, all six areas of the Healthful Living model, and you can learn more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and Healthful Living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And today we're going to be catching up on a few different subjects, checking in with some friends by telephone, and perhaps taking your calls as well. If you have any questions about recent shows or upcoming shows, subjects, nutrition questions, any other questions for either of us. But we're going to start off with a couple of updates recently that have been taking place in our world, or particularly in Julie's primary area of focus, which is nutrition and diet for autism. And Julie's career began, I'm going to speak for her, her initial interests were having to do with ADHD and the relationship with children's behavior and ingredients in food and junk foods and such. And for so many years, there's been sort of the mainstream has been denying that, you know, what we eat or the junk in our foods has anything to do with behavior. And recently, there's been much more research coming out, and just now this thing by the American Academy of Pediatrics. What's that about, Julie?
Well, we're having Jane Hersey on. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
In a couple weeks,
yes,
or something?
Jane Hersey will be on just before Easter, I think, on March 20th.
Okay, great. So she is with the Feingold Association, and they do a lot of advocacy work for children's nutrition and avoiding artificial ingredients and all that junk. And there was, so this, there's a study that came out along those lines that I'm sure she and I will talk about, but I think it's going to be very interesting and might as well talk a little bit about what they found. It was that in a issue of The Lancet that was published in September of last year, they did a study called Food Additives and Hyperactive Behavior in 3-year-old and 8-9-year-old children in the community and randomized blind, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. Ooh, that's a long one. Anyway, long story short was that what they found was that they kind of sliced the information in a variety of different ways and found out that these artificial ingredients actually created hyperactivity in children. And what do I want to say about it? There was really some interesting information about accumulating evidence that neurobehavioral toxicity may characterize a variety of widely distributed chemicals. And really interestingly, they say, for a child without a medical, emotional, or environmental etiology of ADHD behaviors, a trial of a preservative-free food color-free diet is a reasonable intervention. So I think people are just finally excited that the American Academy of Pediatrics is now talking about it. So the study, well, the study came out in September of last year, just in January or February of this year, this month, in the American Pediatrics Journal. They have a journal called the AAP Grand Rounds, and they were the ones that have come out and made a bunch of very interesting statements, despite the increasing data supporting the efficacy of stimulants in preschoolers with ADHD. Parents and providers understandably seek safe and effective interventions that require no prescription. And this is where a recent meta-analysis of 15 trials concluded that there was evidence that these widely distributed chemicals can have neurotoxic effects. And they also said, which I think everybody was so excited, at the end, the editor made a note. So after they wrote the journal, the editorial note says, although quite complicated, this was a carefully conducted study in which the investigators went to great lengths to eliminate bias and to rigorously measure outcomes. In each case, increased hyperactive behaviors were associated with the food additive drink. They gave a drink for the test in virtually every assessment. Thus, the overall finding of the study are clear, the overall findings, and require even we skeptics who have long doubted parental claims of the effects of various foods on the behavior of the children admit we may have been wrong. That is like music to the ears of people like Jane Hersey at the Fine Gold Association that have been pulling their hair out for years and years and years, stating that these artificial colors and preservatives and things were creating problems for their kids. They now see that, you know, every way they seem to slice the study, it was showing more increased hyperactivity for the average child as well.
So they can't hide it anymore, it sounds like. I mean, they've been trying.
Well, I don't know if they were. I mean, according to this, they weren't necessarily hiding it. They were skeptical.
Sure.
Right? He says, even we skeptics who have long doubted parents find that we might have to admit that we've been wrong. So I don't think that it was so much that as much as, you know, they were closed-minded and skeptical and didn't really look at the data. So now I'm hoping that we can be optimistic that they can actually kind of make this shift in the paradigm. So,
well, we've been talking about this paradigm shift for quite a long time and hoping that this is the kind of thing that's going on and stemming from multiple different facets, right? One thing that this article mentions is that more parents are seeking solutions, you know, interventions for their kids that don't require a pharmaceutical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting pressure on the system, schools, their physicians, whatever. You know, what else can we be doing to help our kid who's been labeled as hyperactive, right? Because they're learning more and more. They're exposed to the media. They're exposed to other parents and information and realizing that, you know, the kids are being put on drugs by default and they're being labeled as hyperactive by default, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents may not be agreeing with their kid needing a diagnosis, which then requires the prescription of a pharmaceutical drug in order to deal with it. And they're saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what else can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And now research is coming out that's corroborating that, in fact, you know, some of these ingredients in these foods are directly correlated to the behavior that they're seeing in these kids, and that you can affect that by
diet.
Exactly. Meaning taking out those foods.
Right, right, right. So I think that that's the good news for all the parents out there, is that maybe these maybe the pediatricians that are, you know, working with these families can now see that they're, quote, own people are really hopefully starting to get on board. It's an encouraging article to me that maybe more and more doctors will be able to now read their own journals and go, oh, wow, there's lots of people. Maybe I need to change my thinking on this. So I thought that was a really big step in our progress here.
Well, since your nutrition studies began 6-7 years ago, when you were first looking into mm-hmm. these relationships between these ingredients mm-hmm. and behavior in children, which then led you to become turned on to and fascinated by the more complex biochemistry of autism and how that relates to foods and ingredients and all these different factors. Are you seeing this kind of as a door opening to greater awareness? And how does it tie into the Nutrition for Autism work?
Do I think that it's a doorway to – say that again?
A door opening to expanded awareness and understanding in the mainstream amongst parents.
I mean, I'm hoping. This is the AAP. This is the American Academy of Pediatrics. These are the people that, you know, make policy. So mm-hmm. for them to say this and to not only someone did a study, but they're acknowledging the study and they're admitting that maybe they were incorrect, that's pretty huge. So, yeah, I am really encouraged that, you know, we may not be able to get all the way that we need to with diet, but this, I think, firstly, is a huge piece. These artificial ingredients are terrible and can make a really big difference. And then, if from there, whether it's doctors or whoever, it's like opening a crack or opening the door just a little to see that, yes, quote, food can affect behavior. Once that belief paradigm mm-hmm. exists, then the door is open to, can gluten create opiates and create a problem? Could
right.
dairy do the same thing? Could, you know, corn create aggression? You know, whatever those things are. And now they might actually be open to thinking about it. So I do feel pretty encouraged about all that.
Well, and then interestingly, and we're looking at your blog here at nourishinghope.com, the autism blog.
Yeah, people can find actually both of these, both of the studies as well as sort of my commentary on the study if they go to nourishinghope.com.
And then the other interesting shift that's taking place was this report that came out from the National Institute of Health regarding autism and a study that was done with respect to measurement of the thickness of bones in autistic children.
They did a very interesting study about bone density. Actually, it wasn't quite bone density because they had a difficult time doing holding the child still enough to do the traditional bone density type thing. So they did something different, which more told for thin bones. But it is the first step. They admitted it's sort of the first step they need to do before they can. And now that they found a correlation, they're going to probably do more rigorous. But what they found was thin bones in boys with autism, and specifically boys, because there were not enough girls in the study to make it significantly statistically significant. And so this may hold true for girls too, which I would think it probably does. And what they found was that the children with autism had thinner bones than the neurotypical children. And there's actually been a lot of study going back for, oh boy, decades even, illustrating or studies highlighting that nutrient deficiencies are common in autism, including calcium. So it's not surprising to see that children with autism having more, having thinner bones than neurotypical children. However, the study went a step further and also broke out children with autism that are on special diets, like the gluten and casein-free diet. And that diet eliminates wheat and dairy and some other things. And probably not surprisingly that the children with autism on these special diets even had some more nutrient deficiencies or had the thinnest bones of the three groups. And so, you know, in some ways that would make sense, because if you take out dairy, that's a big source of calcium. But they also went on to explain that vitamin D is an important factor, and that children with autism don't get outside as often because they have to be supervised, so they're not getting as much vitamin D for the strong bones. They're also not eating as varied of a diet. They might not be eating vegetables if they're picky eaters and things. And so there were a lot of things that went into this, but certainly that gluten and casein, taking those foods out, can create nutrient deficiencies if you're not paying attention. So I think that the comment that I wanted to make was that while they talk about I'm looking here for what they say. They say that it would probably be helpful if parents of children with autism consult the dietitian during their children's routine medical care to make sure that the diets are balanced. And that I definitely, definitely agree with, because I had a little trouble with the article where when they called these casein diets, quote, a controversial treatment thought by some to lessen the symptoms of autism. Isn't this exactly what we used to say about those artificial ingredients we were just talking about?
Right.
So that part, I felt a little disappointed that they considered this such a controversial treatment that some thought might lessen. I mean, it's so what do I want to say?
Well, they're using this language that is trying to take people off track a little bit about when they speak of these special diets, right? And since you are a specialist in autism and you do talk about special diets for autism, that people sometimes think that it's a treatment that isn't proven scientifically, right? And I think that I don't even know if the word treatment is a proper thing to say for the application of a diet.
Right,
really,
right.
What you're doing is intentionally focusing on what's going into the body in order to be conscious about how that affects the health of the body.
Yeah, I think that the AMA probably has their own definition of treatment. It's not a word that I use too much, really.
Right. So they when they use it, they're implying that the diet is inferring to be a treatment. So then they try to they somewhat can like vilify it and try to scare you away. Oh, you don't want to do this because it's not, you know, it's controversial or it could be problematic.
Well, what I would have liked for them to have said was, you know, these special diets can limit food intake, and therefore it's important. Or in food intake and nutrients, and therefore it's important if you're going to go on an exclusionary diet where you take out entire, you know, like all of dairy or something like that, that you work with somebody that can help you, which they did say work with somebody, but they also kind of said, you know, these diets, we don't know about these diets. I wish that they had done a little more research showing that, yes, actually they do help 65% of the kids, according to at least the autism.com, which is the Autism Research Institute. Mm-hmm. It does help a segment of kids. And so if and when you decide to try it, it's important to keep good nutrition in mind and not just exclude these foods. That's what I really would have liked them to say. So they're kind of on the right path. They're supporting the need for nutrition consultation. They're supporting the understanding of there are deficiencies, which actually is a huge step, because right. A lot of times in autism, they just say, oops, it's a neurological, or it's a psychiatric condition, sorry, and they don't take nutrient deficiencies or anything into consideration. So I'd say all of those things are really positive.
Yeah, because once just they're acknowledging that there is a nutritional component of what's going on with these children, well, then help more doctors and clinicians to realize that that's an area that needs to be looked at.
Right.
And then to really look at what is meant by diet. Because I think we throw that word around all the time, and there's so much negative connotation with it. And we generally think of restriction, right? Can't have, can't
right.
have. And you just mentioned a moment ago about, you said the words paying attention. When you're paying attention to something. And that's what I think of when I think of a diet, is when you're actually paying attention to mm-hmm. what you're eating, right? Because no diet is intended to be absent of required nutritional intake for the health of the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
But certain diets, which are a strategy that combines avoiding things that you don't want to be having, right, and making sure you're getting things that the body needs,
mm-hmm.
right, together, that's a particular diet. So really, everyone is on a diet, they're just not necessarily paying attention to what their diet is, right? So diet itself should not ever be seen, really, I think, by anybody as like a negative thing.
Well, we look at diet as negative because in America, when we go on a diet, it's to, quote, you know, to lose weight
right.
or to somehow deprive and punish ourselves, or at least that's the, you know, underlying feeling associated
right.
with diets. The first three letters of diet is die.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a word with positive connotations.
Well, I'll use myself as an example. I've recently made a conscious intention to significantly lessen my intake of certain carbohydrates, particularly breads. I mean, I love them. I love bagels and I love these things. And now I'm eating less of them and I'm noticing.
You're not eating any of them.
Any of them. Actually, well, I'm doing gluten-free with you, so I'm eating only certain gluten-free breads.
Right, you're not eating any bagels.
I would say I've cut my bread intake by, you know, 80%,
right.
let's just say. And I'm feeling a benefit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But am I on a diet? Am I considered dieting because I've intentionally chosen to avoid something that I've
right,
found
right. That's
to
a
have
question.
An impact that I don't want to be having on
if,
my body?
When you're actively putting attention on your diet, does that mean you're now on a diet, or are we always on a diet because diet is just what we eat?
Yes.
And that people think of, I don't know, but unless diet, this is a philosophical conversation, unless diet has the intention of working on something positive,
which infers that generally you're not
eating.
Paying attention
right,
to your health
right,
at all.
Right,
you're just eating
right.
whatever comes along, whether
right.
it's a cardboard box. And if you think about that, then that fully justifies the junk that we do eat, which
and
we know has no correlation
diet, right.
to nourishing the body, right? I mean, so many of our foods are completely devoid of anything that actually serves the health of our body. It just takes up space to convince us that we don't have to eat right now until another 3 hours.
Well, let's, before we end this conversation, just tell people a little bit about our upcoming class that we have going on.
Well, on this very subject of nutrition for autism or ADD or actually a number of different things, you are teaching a nutrition class.
I am. I'm teaching a nutrition and cooking class for autism on March 2nd, which is a Sunday, here in Berkeley. And if anybody wants to find out more about that, they can go to nourishinghope.com, which is my website, and it's nourishinghope.com.
And this is a class for parents of children with autism, or grandparents, or really anybody.
And practitioners. We have practitioners
yeah.
come. We have doctors come. It's a class for anybody that either – so it's half the class is – an understanding and education on good nutrition for autism and all the special diets that are done for autism. The second half of the class is basically how to implement it, which is how to do it some recipe ideas, some cooking information. Mm-hmm. And this is certainly something we could do over the course of, we could make this a 3-day seminar, but we're going to do a 1-day class, and we are going to both have information for people that are brand new to all of this and people that have been doing this a long time. So we're going to try to pack a lot of good information in. So if anybody wants to know about that, they can go to my website. And there was one other last little thing I was going to say. Oh, if you're not necessarily ready for that step, but you wanted to learn more, maybe you're intrigued by all of this, you can also find my book, which is available on the Nourishing Hope website, because the book is called Nourishing Hope, hence the name of the website. And that actually is a great way to give it to a parent that needs some assistance, give it to your practitioner. It's packed with really good information, and it's not only helpful for autism, but you notice that we were talking earlier about ADHD. ADHD is seen by many to be having very similar underlying causes, usually much more mild expression of symptoms and challenges and things, but often benefiting very significantly with a few fairly simple changes, like taking out the artificial colors and mm-hmm. flavors and preservatives. Mm-hmm. So, anybody's welcome to come to the class. Sometimes we have a variety of people with health needs or digestive challenges, kids with digestive challenges. These diets work great for digestive challenges because most of the kids with autism, many of them have digestive problems. And so a lot of the diets that we do intentionally for the reason that it helps with the gut. So that's another, another group that might be interested.
Right. And, of course, this year you're doing more and more of getting out and sharing this message with groups across the country and at various conferences, and really primarily trying to spread the reality that, the foods that we eat have a significant impact on the health of the body. And for children with autism, not too many people are yet aware that their routine diets and shifting those diets can help affect the behavior in their kids.
Yeah, and I want to say one more thing before we go to a break about that, is that very often you hear that there's a window of time that you have to get your child and intervene in order to, quote, recover them from autism, and that, it has to be before the age of 3, or it has to be before the age of 13, or, there's all these things. And I just want people to realize that, in my opinion, that's just limited thinking, and it doesn't really do anybody any good. Sure, if you've only been sick for 2 years, you're going to recover a lot faster and maybe more easily than if you've been sick for 20 years. But it doesn't mean that somebody that's 80 years old, let's not take autism, but just, the average person that's 80 years old, if they have, a digestive problem, they're still going to benefit by diet, even though they've had this problem for a long time, or even though they're older. And so, yeah, we may see the most success in the younger children, but that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, all the time you hear of things that go outside the norm. So they say, if your child isn't speaking by this age, they're not going to. Well, that's garbage too, because one of our friends just the other day said that her son started speaking much later. And so anyway, all of those sort of, if anybody tries to lay on any sort of time frame or timeline or age, I don't think it's accurate, and I definitely think it does a disservice. So I wouldn't pay any attention to those ideas.
Yeah, be on the lookout for anyone who's saying things that limit your potential or your possibility.
Right, exactly.
So we're going to take a break?
We are going to take a break, and we will we're going to get our guest on the line. We're going to get Natalie on the line, and we're going to be talking about
things that you can do right here and now to make a bit of a difference in your world, and how she is inspiring others in her own company to start thinking this way and take some action, just like we talk on the show. A little bit here and there.
Right.
A little bit of knowledge goes a long way.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. This is Reality Sandwich. You can get this show and all past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. And you can also find out more about us at healthfulliving.org. We will be right back after the break. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco. You're listening to Reality Sandwich with Julie and Martin Matthews, and we are back on the line.
Well, we're going to bring a friend of ours on the line from Toastmasters. Julie and I belong to Toastmasters, Golden Gate Toastmasters Group, which is a group of really fascinating, cool people who are learning about being more comfortable in their public speaking, giving presentations. And every week, there's always these great speeches from our fellow members. Mm-hmm.
We always learn so much interesting information.
Yeah, members, they have 5 to 7 minutes or so to talk about something that's really passionate to them, and it's a concentrated, jam-packed information, and we're always learning really cool stuff. And last night, Natalie gave a speech that was right on subject with Reality Sandwich and Healthful Living. Things that you can do to change, things that you can do now to change the world.
Mm.
And she had all these ideas and insights and is motivating people in her company. I wanted to bring her on the line and welcome her to the show.
Natalie, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you gave this speech last night, and you just had all these little ideas, and just—I just love the idea that you can just give people little pieces of information that, you know, plant a seed in their mind, and then start slowly, slowly affecting their behavior. So what inspired your speech?
Well, actually, the thought of global warming to me is such a huge idea, and I really want to bring education to more people. And in doing so, just bringing those little nuggets, as you said, to kind of inspire the change and make the little steps actionable that they can take in their everyday life and not make a huge change.
Mm.
So it was those little things.
And you're an HR person, right?
I'm actually in marketing.
Oh, marketing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a regular corporate person.
I am.
Regular corporate person interested in the environment. How interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
So what were some of the highlights in your speech? What are some of the things that you had identified that you shared?
Well, I talked about three things that we do every day and kind of overlook. Paper usage, electricity, and purchasing bottled water.
Mm.
Yes. And just little things. So electricity, for instance, you know, you're sitting at your desk, you walk away, your computer goes offline, and everyone wants those cool, movable screensavers. Well, in fact, those actually waste 100 watts of energy.
Hmm.
And if you just have a blank black screen, it's only 10 watts of energy.
Hmm.
Pretty incredible. So the little things that you can change can make actually a big impact if we all make those little steps.
Right.
Right. And what about paper? We seem to use so much paper.
Hmm. We do, yes. And office paper actually accounts for 70% of all office waste is just paper. And, I mean, that's really what got me and my colleague actually to start this little committee within our organization to help people to understand that we're wasteful and stop throwing paper in the garbage and recycle it or reuse it. And it's funny. So we found this statistic that actually all of the office paper that we waste is actually 1.5 pounds per person per day in waste of paper.
Wow.
Hmm.
Isn't that incredible?
Wow. That is amazing.
And
how did you find that out?
We do a lot of research. We've done a lot of search on the internet, lots of reading. I mean, this has opened up such a black hole for us, and we're constantly reading, you know, different articles and books and researching online. So
wow.
Now, us being you and some colleagues from work?
Yes, another colleague and I, Genevieve, we started this little grassroots committee to really just help people understand the things that they can do every day to change. So we send out a bi-monthly email, and it just kind of explains the did you know kind of the alarming factoids that kind of draw people in.
Hmm.
And then we say, now this is what you can do to make a difference.
Wow. And how many people are in your company?
In our company?
Yeah.
Oh, in the thousands.
Wow. Yeah. So this can make a big, big impact.
And the company supports you guys doing this?
They actually do, yes. They actually encourage us. They're doing some bigger initiatives within our company. I'm actually in the wine business, and we're doing some sustainability initiatives, you know, water and, you know, different things we can do in the vineyards. And Genevieve and I are doing things, giving ideas to those who work in the corporate office that work here in Napa.
Hmm. Wow. So tell us, what are you doing with the paper? How are you saving on some of that waste?
We've set up scrap paper bins so you can reprint on old paper. We've actually set up printers so that you can print double-sided.
Mm.
And we're also working on an initiative to buy more recycled paper content as well.
Great. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what was the third area? You mentioned paper, electricity, and water.
Water, yes.
Water bottles.
Mm, those plastic water bottles.
Yeah, those Fiji water bottles.
Exactly. It's incredible. This one, actually, it's hit home with me so much when I was researching on this. Americans spent more on buying water last year than they did on iPods or movie tickets.
Ugh, and you know, I just have to say, this is one of those areas that makes me so angry, because why do people buy bottled water? Because they feel that the water, the drinking water, is not very healthy, it's not very clean. So the companies get to save all sorts of money by polluting our water, mm-hmm. and then we have to spend money to buy clean water, and at the same time, we're affecting the environment and our health by all that plastic that we're consuming.
I know, it's amazing. And actually, in fact, most of the water that we buy in the bottle is actually just tap water. It's
yes.
no better than what you can pour out of your kitchen sink.
Yes, yes. That's also really scary.
It is. And it's all in the name of convenience, too.
Mm-hmm. So what have you done in that area?
We have encouraged everyone to bring reusable glasses in. We actually have a kitchen where we have glasses we can reuse and not use bottled water. And I've actually seen a decrease in plastic bottles around the office.
Great. Now, does your company, I know some companies you go in and they have just cases of bottled water they actually supply for their...
Yes.
Were you doing that at one point, or...?
We actually still are, and that is another initiative that Genevieve and I are working on to figure out how we can decrease the use of that. We have set up recycle bins around all of the conference areas, because before people were just taking those water bottles and tossing them in the garbage, which is such a pity. They're 100% recyclable.
Right.
So we have set up the recycle bins to help with that, and we're trying to find a better way to supply water in those large meetings.
That would be great. I wonder... You know, sometimes it may be a little tough. When people bring their own glass, what do they fill it up with?
We have a filtered water, actually, that comes out of our sink.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got the filtered water, but when you're in the meetings, you don't really have access to that filtered water.
Right.
Some people
do bring them in, but it's, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's just such the whole water thing has been such an interesting phenomenon for the past number of years, because 20 years ago, this... You know, board meetings were not filled with people, you know, tables full of people with water bottles on their desks and stuff. I mean,
well, we didn't even have water bottles.
What did we do before?
Well, we drank tap water.
Right.
Has our need for water consumption gone up?
Well,
this is just part of one of those modern things where we've had this capability to make all this plastic bottles of water and all these other drinks. And so now we've got them all over the place, and now we're realizing that it's quite a lot.
What about you, Natalie? Have you seen anything that sort of explained the explosion in water, bottled water, or, I don't know, any other facts for people on the bottled water subject?
I have seen an increase, and it's all about prestige. You know, we're in the age of consumption, and we want everything now, and we want it, and we're in gluttony, really. Mm. And actually, there's one statistic just based on our consumption. In 1976, Americans only drank 1.6 gallon of bottled water a year, and last year we drank 28.3 gallons.
Wow.
So it's good. We're drinking more water, but we're doing it in all the wrong ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So... I know it's hard. I'm guilty of it myself, of buying a bottle of water, you know, if I need to, if I'm thirsty and I'm on the road. But
right.
There's so many things we can do to think about that. Bring a canteen with you.
Right.
And if you do buy the bottled water, think about where it's coming from. The local bottled water is much less fossil fuel usage to actually get to where you're buying it than, say, buying it from Italy or Fiji. Just think about those little things and you make a big impact.
Mm, good point. Very good point.
Right. Good. Okay, well, I'm glad you're making an impact in the company.
Yeah.
I think that it's definitely encouraging to see pockets of people within an organization is doing something to spread it and share with others.
If there's other people out there, I'm sure there's hopefully millions of them like yourself that are in companies and might want to do something like this. Do you have any good websites that people could start getting some information on how they can make changes?
Yes, actually, Genevieve and I belong to Net Impact, and it's a company that helps people like Genevieve and I and other companies, both big and small, and helps them kind of figure out how they can take initiatives on within their own organizations. And they've been very helpful and very instrumental in getting us going and getting our momentum going for our project.
Great. And that's just netimpact.com?
.org.
.org.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take
thanks,
care.
Thanks.
Thanks for all the good work you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
See, isn't that just nice? Yeah. Doesn't it make you feel good about humanity?
It's encouraging to hear, you know, people making a difference and doing what they can, and that, you know, that they have passion for sharing it with others. And, you know, it's definitely catchy because people want to participate, you know. And
I think people just don't know, you know, it's like it's a big, you know, good for her. There's thousands of people and it's hard to move a ship with thousands of people. And but you know what? It's not really that hard. It's just our perception. You know, look
right.
at all of this that two people are doing. The, you know, I mean, I mean, think about that. A pound of paper per person per day, mm-hmm. thousands of people out there. You know, you make a small shift in that and that is really huge.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's really exciting.
And the more that people do it, especially in those social environments of a company, the more that people around them are paying attention, the more that there's social facilitation. We could say social pressure, but social facilitation, because you see others do it, then it becomes easier for you. And next thing you know, everyone's bringing their water bottle to the business meeting, and then we all feel like we're making a difference.
Right, and then we feel cool because we're bringing our own bottle versus
right.
you know this prestige of the water bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Right. So very interesting. So I'm at the website right now, netimpact.org. So great. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to bring her on today at such short notice, and she could make it.
Well, it was just so interesting because I heard a show yesterday about the difficulty of really zeroing in on. On the carbon blueprint, carbon footprint, right? This whole conversation that really everything that we do somehow impacts the environment or somehow impacts global warming or global. I don't always use the topic of global warming as a catch-all, but really our impact, you know, on the environment and on the world. And it's like, how do you measure that? Yeah, for example, if you live in New York, buying a bottle of wine has a certain type of an impact, and where you buy that wine has a certain impact. So if you're in New York, it's better to buy a French wine because of the total cost involved in bringing it to you.
Oh.
Whereas if you buy a California wine, then the added impact of that is shipping across the country and all these different factors, whereas French wine will be shipped by boat more likely.
Hmm.
So therefore, its overall impact is less.
That's interesting.
And as you move westward, you know, then there becomes a place where it's more feasible by way of that total impact, right, to go with something from the West Coast versus the East Coast.
Well, we're lucky. We should go with California Wines, which I think is one of the companies that Natalie works for, because we, you know, obviously that's an easy one for us.
But the organizing principle of the inquiry about the blueprint, the carbon footprint of these things is really just in the thinking about it and the being aware of what goes into these various things. What goes into making a water bottle? What goes into putting that food on our table? Where did it come from? Where did it get shipped from? What does it take to bring apples from New Zealand for us to be able to eat here? And these types of factors, this types of information, this way of perceiving things is going to be increasingly important to each and every one of us as we go forward in time and realize the impact of the patterns of and ways of being that we've set up that are not sustainable. I mean, you know, we're looking at we have now $100 an hour a barrel for oil. All those costs are just beginning to trickle down to the cost of everything associated that has to be transported.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that we think and begin to realize and understand, you know, where all this stuff comes from, the more that we can then be conscious and inform the choices that we're making in the very moment.
Sure.
And if that choice is as simple as starting to use your water bottle more consistently and slowly drawing back on your part of the collective whole of consumption, you know, that's the only way we're ever going to make a change.
Well, the other really positive part is that it's a win-win for everyone and everything because less plastic is terrible for your health. All of that plastic, all that, you know, that we're ingesting, they did studies on baby boys and high phthalate or plastic levels associated with changes in genital structure. And I mean, so in other words, the extra estrogens that are in the plastics affecting the actual structure of genitals for boys, you know, from those plastics. I mean, those types of things, that's an addition. So I guess the good news is that this is a win-win positive thing all the way around. And as Natalie just demonstrated, not difficult to do.
Right. And it doesn't matter if you perceive that there's a direct impact between what you do and changing the world. What matters is that you feel good about your part.
Right.
Yeah. All change begins with you and what you decide to do right here and now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. So, yeah. Let's take a quick musical break, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk about the shows we have coming up over the next month or so.
Stay tuned.
Tell me now. And thunder and cool birds, the wisdom and fire and cool peace, the great creator of all things. Until I who is the master of master and who is the mighty superior and who is the only creator of all things. Yes. It's perplexing mankind. They keep searching to find the power that lies within the depths of the human mind. But I say greater is he who lives within you and me. There is more to beyond than what the visible eyes can see. Will I who flash the lightning and thunder and who burns the freestone and fire and who the great creator of all things. Till I who is the master of master and who is the mighty superior and who is the great creator of all things. Is it Yahweh?
Okay, we are back. This is KPOO San Francisco, Julie and Martin Matthews with Reality Sandwich. And we wanted to just finish up our conversation today by kind of giving people a little overview on what we're going to be talking about in the upcoming weeks. Some really good shows that segue right into what we've been talking about today in one way or another. Why don't you tell them who we're having on next week?
So next week's show on Reality Sandwich, we're bringing back a guest. Raymond Francis has been with us a few different times. He's going to be talking, this specific show is going to be on cancer. Raymond contacted us, and cancer is one of the areas that he really has a personal passion about, applying his work and knowledge of the body, biochemistry, and of disease, and his particular framework of looking at the body and ridding it of disease. Cancer is a big area that he works in, and we're going to do a show next week specifically about that. And then you'll kind of also share some of your nutritional perspective on cancer as well.
Sure.
And then in 2 weeks, we have Mark Schaus on the show. Mark is coming back, and
yes,
tell us about that.
Yes, he has a book, Achieving Victory Over a Toxic World. And he has a own personal story of a child that has some seizures and health challenges that I believe are related to pesticide exposure and things. So I'm going to find out more when I get a copy of his book, which I should be getting any day because it's coming out. I think it isn't even out yet. I think it's coming out right around now. So it's going to be very timely. He spent 3 years writing it. He works for some laboratory companies, so he has an extensive background in biochemistry, and he's very knowledgeable. And so that's going to be really interesting. I'm sure we'll talk more about the phthalates and all of the plastics and things, as well as pesticides and other endocrine disruptors and, you know, hormone mimickers and neurotoxins and all that kind of stuff. And the wonderful thing about him is we'll probably do something similar to Natalie, in which he'll be able to provide a bunch of fairly simple things that we can all do that make a big impact.
So from learning about how to deal with a toxic world, the week after that, on March 14th, we'll be learning more about how to deal with our toxic minds. Dr. Stephen Edelson will be on. He's the author of a book called 3-Minute Therapy. And we'll be speaking about the various approaches in his book. And I'll have a particular interest in speaking to him about those applications with respect to a lot of pervasive challenges like depression and anxiety and, you know, toxic thoughts that that all of us get caught in that keep us down and stuck in negative emotional states. And then following on with dealing with emotional states, the week after that, we'll be doing a show about emotional freedom technique.
Oh, one of my favorites.
EFT technique, also called tapping.
Oh, it's one of my, definitely my favorites. Really great way when someone, oh boy, just needs some, I don't even know how to describe, just a really good, I don't want to say therapy, but it's just some really easy, simple tool anybody can do anywhere to help them, whether they're stuck in anger or anxiety or whatever it might be, helping them kind of transition through that. There's some really interesting foundations in in acupuncture and meridian lines and things like that. And I have heard many, many doctors, MDs, a variety of different practitioners and individuals use this. In fact, acupuncturists that now use this instead of acupuncture. I mean, it's quite effective, and I think it's a wonderful tool. So I'm really looking forward to having...
It's an effective technique that people can do themselves.
Yeah. Definitely, that's the thing. You can I thought of the 3-minute therapy. It's very similar, and I don't know if the technique is similar, but just in that it's something you could do in 30 seconds,
right,
or
something
you could do anywhere.
You can do for yourself.
At any point, any time. It's very simple.
And then we also have a show with Jane Hersey coming back.
Oh, great! The woman that we were talking about for the artificial ingredients.
We'll be speaking all about artificial ingredients just before Easter, to help people kind of think about what they're feeding their kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting because my client this morning was telling me that she doesn't have a lot of support from her school in implementing these special diets. And the other day, she found her child eating a cupcake with red frosting.
Mm.
And she about flipped out. And the teacher actually got kind of upset with her and said, "It's just sugar and water." And she said, "You know, when in chemistry does sugar and water turn bright red?" And so people just – and this is teachers feeding this to children.
Yeah.
And when someone confronts them with it, them still not understanding why that wouldn't be good. So I think this show is going to be a great show, and this new research coming out is really beneficial. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Sometimes other people don't know, and you do. So you got to go with you. You got to go with your gut. And so you can read more about those upcoming shows at realitysandwichradio.com. You can hear this show and any past show also at that location. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. Remember, all change begins with you. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and Julie is?
I am Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. You can find out more about us at healthfulliving.org, and you can find out about my upcoming class and my autism work at nourishinghope.com. Thanks for listening.
Come and sit down, let me talk to you. I have so much on my wisdom that I want to share for you. I know that you've been working very hard to establish yourself. Now you're here, my mind's made up, just let me express myself.